Hello, I'm Dr. Monica Tinkopa, and I welcome you back to the Glow Up Era of MASH Management. This initiative is supported by an educational grant from Novo Nordisk Incorporated. This is the last of our four-part CMEO snack series. Today's episode is titled GLP-1's Got That Riz: The Future of MASH and Metabolic Syndrome Care. Again, I'm Monica Tinkopa. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine, Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at UC San Diego Health. I'm an investigator in the MASLD Research Center here as well. I'm honored to be joined today by Dr. Naeem Alkhouri, who I'll ask to introduce himself. Welcome, Dr. Alkhouri.
Thank you, Dr. Tinkopa and Naeem Alkhouri. I'm the Chief Medical Officer at Summit Clinical Research and the Director of Research at the Clinical Research Institute of Ohio and a steatologist at heart. I care about MASH and designing clinical trials for MASH and metabolic dysfunction-associated liver disease. Glad to be here today.
Fantastic. I look forward to our discussion today. As a reminder to the audience, the first three snacks in the series followed the case of Mr. B, who ultimately was treated with both semaglutide and resmetirom, two recently approved medications for the treatment of MASH. But now, as our learning objective indicates, let's look to the future and explore what's on the horizon in this rapidly developing field. So our objectives are to evaluate the future role of GLP-1 receptor agonists to provide extrahepatic benefits in MASH, and to go over the potential use of dual and triple agonists that are similar to GLP-1 receptor agonists. So, Dr. Alkhouri, please tell us about why addressing extrahepatic comorbidities in patients with MASLD is important.
Thank you, Dr. Tinkopa. This is a very important question, but we know that MASLD and MASH, they're part of a systemic problem, part of the metabolic syndrome. And we know that in patients with MASH, about 80% have obesity, about 45% will have type 2 diabetes, and many more will have prediabetes and insulin resistance, and about 70% will have dyslipidemia, hypertension, or metabolic syndrome. So it is very important to address MASH within this context and potentially utilize metabolic medications that can have pleiotropic benefits, such as semaglutide, as an example of a GLP-1 receptor agonist, because we have data showing that semaglutide can reduce weight, it can help with insulin sensitivity, it has a great effect on reducing hemoglobin A1c, but it also affects other organs, including the kidneys. There is also benefit on lipid profile, especially reducing triglycerides, and most importantly, also the cardiovascular benefits and decreasing MACE events and potentially cardiovascular mortality.
Thanks, Dr. Alkhouri. Before we continue, here's a question for our audience. In the SELECT trial, semaglutide 2.4 milligrams once weekly was studied in adults with overweight or obesity and established cardiovascular disease, however, without diabetes. Which of the following extrahepatic benefits was not observed with semaglutide? Was it A, reduction in risk of all-cause death? B, reduction in risk of developing kidney disease? C, reduction in risk of hospitalization for hemorrhagic stroke? D, reduction in risk of developing diabetes, or E, I don't know. Well, if you selected C, then you're correct. Semaglutide was not shown to reduce the risk in hospitalizations for hemorrhagic stroke. So, as follow-up to our ARS question, I'd like to briefly review the pivotal SELECT trial that evaluated the cardiovascular benefits of semaglutide. So, in this study, semaglutide was shown to reduce cardiovascular events in individuals with obesity. And what you can see here was the relative risk reduction overall was 20%. It also showed several other benefits. So, there was a 19% relative risk reduction in risk of all-cause death, a 22% relative risk reduction in the risk of developing kidney disease, 73% relative risk reduction in developing diabetes, and a 21% relative risk reduction in the risk of heart failure hospitalization or need for a heart failure visit. Semaglutide has been shown to reduce all-cause mortality and protect organs across patients with cardiometabolic disease. So, while we touched on a number of different outcomes, obviously from a hepatology perspective, we're interested in the liver-specific benefits. And when you focus on that, what has been shown that compared to placebo, 37% of individuals on semaglutide had an improvement in fibrosis, and 63% of individuals treated with semaglutide had MASH resolution compared to placebo. So now let's talk about the impact and promise of GLP-1 receptor agonists and co-agonists. Dr. Alkhouri, if you can please continue.
Thank you, Dr. Tinkopa. So, as you mentioned, semaglutide as a GLP-1 receptor agonist has great effects in patients with MASH, including MASH resolution and fibrosis improvement. But now we also have a dual agonist, and tirzepatide is a classic example of a dual agonist of GLP-1 and GIP, has been shown to be beneficial in terms of inducing weight loss. It's a great diabetes medication, and it has potential in patients with MASH. And then we also have dual agonists with GLP-1 and glucagon, such as survodutide. Now we know that glucagon has direct effects in the liver, including the increased utilization of fatty acids in the form of mitochondrial beta oxidation and potentially affecting other metabolic pathways. So when we look at the data with tirzepatide, we had a phase 2b trial where patients were biopsied at the beginning of the study and at the end, and they looked at the two traditional endpoints of MASH resolution and fibrosis improvement, and there was a significant percentage of patients that achieved MASH resolution up to 62%. Compared to only 10% in the placebo arm. And similarly, a higher percentage treated with tirzepatide achieved fibrosis improvement by one stage between 50 to 55% compared to 30% in the placebo arm. So this was a positive trial, and now tirzepatide is entering a phase 3 study to assess its impact in patients with MASH and advanced fibrosis. And then we have survodutide, which is a dual agonist, as I mentioned. So it affects GLP-1 with all its benefits, but also glucagon. And I'll hand it back to you, Dr. Tinkopa, to present the data on survodutide from the phase 2b trial.
Perfect. So in this trial, compared to placebo at three different doses, what we found was that up to 83% of individuals treated with survodutide achieved improvement in MASH with no worsening fibrosis. And this was at week 48. So you can see that among those who had paired biopsy results and then among all of those who just had data available for analysis. Another promising agent is within the class of FGF21. Dr. Alkhouri, can you please tell us about this pleiotropic action?
With pleasure. So, fibroblast growth factor 21 or FGF21, this is a hormone that we produce in our liver, and it has pleiotropic effects mainly in the liver, decreasing de novo lipogenesis, but also it has effects in the adipose tissue, affecting lipolysis. And there's evidence that it can also affect food intake through CNS effects. It can affect also cardiovascular. System and potentially has beneficial effects on the muscle and kidney. And we have very promising data with one of the FGF21s called efruxifermin. It's been studied in patients with MASH F2, F3, but more recently we had promising data in patients with MASH cirrhosis, so stage 4 fibrosis, where a phase 2 study showed that treating patients with MASH cirrhosis with efruxifermin at the 50 milligram weekly dose was associated with significant reversal of cirrhosis. So, going from stage 4 to stage 3 fibrosis, again, after 96 weeks of treatment, so almost 2 years. This happened in 39% of patients treated with efruxifermin versus around 15% in the placebo. And this was what we call a completers analysis. So, all the patients had two biopsies, and this was statistically significant. So, I would say that was a watershed moment in the field in terms of, reversing MASH cirrhosis. Also, recently we've seen great data with resmetirom, which is a thyroid hormone receptor beta agonist that was approved last year to treat patients with MASH and F2, F3. fibrosis, but there was an open label study that treated 122 patients with MASH cirrhosis with resmetirom 80 milligrams for up to 2 years. And in that study, we showed a significant reduction in vibration control transient elastography, liver stiffness as a surrogate for liver fibrosis. We also showed that over 50% of patients improved their liver stiffness from baseline by 25% or more. And then we showed that approximately one-third of patients potentially achieved reversal of cirrhosis. And that was defined as reducing liver stiffness to less than 15 kilopascals and also reducing liver stiffness by 25% from baseline or more. So this was, again, open label, no placebo, but very encouraging results in the hardest to treat population, which is patients with MASH cirrhosis. Resmetirom is currently in the Maestro-NASH Outcomes trial. This is a phase three study that enrolled approximately 850 patients with MASH cirrhosis. And we anticipate the results of this trial in 2027. And if positive, this could lead to the first approval of a MASH drug for patients with the most advanced form of the disease, which is compensated cirrhosis with stage four fibrosis. So overall, we have a deep pipeline. We have many promising agents. And I do believe that GLP-1s got that riz. And I think that riz is going to be even better when we add potentially other mechanisms of action, such as THR beta agonism and potentially FGF21s. And I hope that we can really change the natural history of the disease and prevent cirrhosis in non-cirrhotic patients, and then reverse cirrhosis and prevent outcomes in patients with MASH cirrhosis.
Thank you so much. So now that we've kind of completed the review of the primary data, I did want to take some time to discuss where we're at with things, how you think about the approach to treatment of patients with our currently available therapies, and then what your vision is in terms of patient care moving forward. So given the currently available therapies, how do you think about a patient that comes to your office in terms of choosing between the two therapies that are currently options for patients?
So, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think, the way I think about my patients, I divide them into patients with type 2 diabetes and non-diabetics. So in patients with type 2 diabetes, the clinical picture today, about 30% of them come to us on a stable dose GLP-1 receptor agonist. But unfortunately, they still have MASH with F2, F3. And I feel like in these patients, my go-to is resmetirom. And then you can tweak the dose for the GLP-1 or potentially switch, but I do believe that they did not respond to a GLP-1. I also have about 20 to 30% of diabetics that tried a GLP-1 but did not tolerate it well because of nausea or constipation or sometimes insurance issues. But you have also that patient population where I would go to a THR beta resmetirom. And then I have about one-third of patients that are GLP-1 naive. And I think in a diabetic, unless there is another contraindication like history of pancreatitis or medullary thyroid cancer, I would strongly suggest that you utilize a GLP-1. And then you reassess after 72 weeks or so, similar to the ESSENCE trial that assessed the efficacy of semaglutide. And if you see great response, then you just maintain the GLP-1. And I do my efficacy assessment on a yearly basis. If I see disease progression, then I can add resmetirom. I think in non-diabetics, obviously we have less exposure to GLP-1 agonists. We have some patients that have been on them because of the obesity indication. But to be honest with you, the success rate getting the medicine approved through insurance for the obesity indication has been much lower than those with type 2 diabetes. So if the patient has been exposed to a GLP-1, didn't tolerate a GLP-1, I go to resmetirom. If not, then I can utilize the GLP-1. If they don't tolerate, of course, we switch. If they tolerate, then I assess at the 1 year mark or so and then see if there is a response or not. I think The one point I want to highlight is the delta on fibrosis improvement with both resmetirom and semaglutide was between 12 to 14%, respectively, which really leaves a lot of room for improvement. And that's why I do believe that with these two agents, there's synergy and room for combination therapy. But also, I do believe that we need other mechanisms of actions and other therapeutic agents that can take that delta on fibrosis. I mean, we would love to see a delta from placebo in the 30 to why not 50% range. Now, we do have some promising data with the FGF21s, for example, efruxifermin and the Harmony trial when patients were treated for the 96 weeks also. And we saw a good delta that will be in the range that I would like to see moving forward. Of course, taking this with a grain of salt because it's a phase two and that was the completers analysis. But again, if this is replicated in a phase three, that would be a nice addition to the field. But at the end of the day, I envision that we will need different classes of medicines, and I think the management of fibrotic MASH is going to evolve in a similar fashion to type 2 diabetes, where you potentially can start with monotherapy in less advanced disease and monitor for response and then add the second line if needed. And then for patients with advanced disease, maybe starting combination therapy and then potentially de-escalating therapy if patients have great response or maintaining combination therapy if the response is slower than you would like. So I think again, this is a chronic disease, it's a metabolic disease, and I am optimistic about what we have, but also I realize that some patients will be adequately managed with monotherapy, but many will need combination therapy.
Fantastic. Very informative answer. The other question I feel like we get all the time is, what is your vision for the role of therapeutic agents approved for MASH, either now or in the future, that don't also offer benefits in terms of weight loss? Because as we've talked about today, a lot of the benefits we see with these medications have kind of pleiotropic effects across different forms of metabolic dysfunction. What's your vision in terms of the role of medications for MASH that don't also offer those additional benefits for, take for example, resmetirom, where you're not also seeing the substantial weight loss?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the ideal medication for MASH should treat, the liver, of course, and lead to MASH resolution, fibrosis improvement, reduction in liver enzymes. But also, ideally, it will impact each component of the metabolic syndrome. So you would see weight loss, improvement in A1C, dyslipidemia. And I think even more important is to actually show reduction in cardiovascular outcomes, which, you showed with semaglutide in the SELECT trial. And this was non-diabetic patients at risk for cardiovascular disease. And also, eventually, we would like to see a reduction in major adverse liver outcomes, right? So less progression to cirrhosis, less decompensation. So I think, we need to look at the totality of the data. I mean, I think, of course, I prefer if we can induce weight loss and have high efficacy on the liver. But we need to be realistic that we have patients with cirrhosis where it doesn't seem that semaglutide monotherapy will be effective. I think we need to also show reduction in liver outcomes, and that we could potentially show with resmetirom and the MAESTRO MASH outcomes trial. And we are looking at progression to cirrhosis with the semaglutide. So, I mean, I think, of course, weight loss is a desired outcome, but it cannot be the only outcome. We are also learning that. There are different phenotypes within the MASH spectrum. Some patients have disease that's driven by specific genetic variants and polymorphisms. And we've seen patients, even after bariatric surgery and significant weight loss, that do not improve liver fibrosis. So I want to highlight this point that, weight loss is great. Weight loss sometimes is adequate, even with the lifestyle intervention, but you can't count on it. And you need to monitor and see if the patient is progressing. But again, I think all comers, I guess, are welcome because this is a new field. I mean, we've waited a couple decades to see the first medication approved. That was just last year. So I think we don't want to be too quick to say we solved the problem. We still have a lot of work to do.
So from your perspective, what would you say are the biggest unmet needs in terms of MASH therapeutics?
In my mind, no doubt, treating patients with compensated MASH cirrhosis. I think you have a narrow window, and if we are able to reverse the disease, I think that would be wonderful. But if we can just prevent decompensating events, that by itself would be a major development in the field. I think number two would be improving the delta on fibrosis. I would like to get again into the 30% range to feel that I'm confident that we can reverse the disease in patients with MASH and F2 and F3. And then I would say outcomes data, right? I mean, I think this is the biggest missing piece of information that we need. I'd like to see it in patients with F3, preventing progression to cirrhosis. I would like to see it in patients with F4, preventing decompensation, liver transplant, and overall mortality. So these would be my three unmet needs in the field.
Perfect. One more point before we get to kind of the closing slides. Semaglutide is approved at a specific dosage for the treatment of MASH specifically. And a lot of patients come to our practice on varying doses. To what extent do you feel strongly that you have to try and get them to that specific dose for them to have a liver-specific benefit? And then what are your thoughts long term about tolerability, right? You had said to yourself, for a lot of these incretin-based therapies, there's a lot of side effects. A lot of patients end up having a gap in therapy, either because of side effects or access issues. From a real world treatment perspective, how feasible do you think these agents are going to be if we feel like, as a chronic disease, people are going to have to be maintained on these agents?
Yes, that's an excellent question and very practical one. So I think number one is the ESSENCE trial. The majority of patients were able to dose escalate to the 2.4 milligram weekly. If I remember correctly, that was about 83% of patients. And the rest of the patients, for the most part, they're at the 1.7 milligram. So I think if you have a patient coming to you on a 1 milligram dose for diabetes, and it seems like this is controlling the A1C, but they still have F2, F3. These are patients that I would highly recommend you push the dose to the 2.4 if you can, and try to get the maximum effect on the liver, because this is the dose that we know works to actually achieve MASH resolution and fibrosis improvement. I think if you have a patient that is GLP-1 naive, and you start to dose escalate, and then you get to the 1 milligram dose, and the patient is losing weight, the A1C is getting better, but for tolerability issues, they say, I just can't go to the 1.7. I think what I would do is I would just treat for 1 year or 72 weeks and then do another assessment, because if they're losing weight, if the A1C is better, it might be adequate. If I do my assessment after 1 year and the fibrosis is not improving, then I would suggest that either we try really hard to go to higher dose or we just add resmetirom. And the key is that we will not stop the GLP-1 if we see other benefits. So if I take your A1C from 8.5 to 6.5, but your fibrosis is not improving, I'm going to continue the GLP-1 and add resmetirom to it. So this would be my take. Again, if someone has been on a stable dose, never, tried to dose escalate because they felt the diabetes is controlled, and they still have F2, F3, I would try to increase. If we're starting de novo and they can go to a higher dose, don't assume it's futile. I would give it enough time, reassess. If they respond, great. If they don't, then I have to potentially add resmetirom, or maybe try to dose escalate again.
And to your point about reassessing kind of response, how do you do that in your patient population?
Yeah, so the disease we know is driven by steatosis, disease activity in terms of inflammation, ballooning, and importantly also fibrosis. So this is what we look at with biopsy typically in terms of MASH resolution, fibrosis improvement. In the real world, we look at it different ways. So I utilize the CAP score or MRI PDFF to assess my steatosis response, and my goal is to reduce CAP by 40 units from baseline and my PDFF by 30% relative for reduction. And then I look at my ALT and AST, and this is my simple and not perfect way to assess disease activity, but it does matter. As liver doctors, we like it when the ALT goes down. And there's data showing that actually, when the ALT goes down in patients with elevated ALT, there's higher chances of achieving MASH resolution. So, my goal for ALT is to decrease it by 17 unit absolute reduction from baseline, or 20% reduction from baseline. And then I look at my liver stiffness on the VCTE machine, or other ways to assess elastography. And my goal is to reduce it by 25% from baseline. MR elastography is another great way when available. And my goal will be to reduce it by 20%. So this is how we assess response to treatment based on non-invasive tests. It is important to realize that it may take longer for fibrosis to improve. So, if I see improvement in the CAP score and ALT and the fibrosis stage is remaining the same, I typically continue with the treatment. The only time I feel like the treatment is futile is when you don't see meaningful reduction in CAP or ALT and the liver stiffness is going up. Then I feel like, okay, we need to think about something else because this medicine is not doing what it's supposed to do.
Sounds good. So to summarize, it sounds like currently where we are, given the metabolic comorbidities of our patient population for primary therapy, a lot of people are on semaglutide, and potentially resmetirom as an additive, or if they have other contraindications, they're not on semaglutide. But moving forward in the future, as we have dual and triple agonists, perhaps incretin will stay as the baseline, and as additional things are approved, we'll have additive therapy, as you said, kind of combination therapy. And then kind of thinking much further forward, as you mentioned, kind of genetic-based precision medicine, hopefully can also come into the fold to individualize therapy. Would you say that that's an accurate assessment, or what's your vision for the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a great vision, and I would hope that we will have many more options by the end of the decade. I think, as you mentioned, precision medicine and looking at mechanisms that can silence certain genes like PNPLA3, affecting HSD17, beta 13, these are looking promising, and we should have some readouts from some of these clinical trials in the near future. So that's going to guide us if we're going to move on to phase three in these therapeutics. Also, we are getting a deeper understanding of the effects of some of these genes on response to GLP-1 and GLP-1 GIP, and potentially resmetirom. And maybe we will get to a point in the future where we actually genotype all patients, and then based on the genotype and the phenotype and the prior exposure to medications, you select your treatment. And I don't think this is science fiction. I think this is happening very soon. And my understanding in the US now that commercially you can look at PNPLA3 and HSD17 is coming. And we've been doing this in research now for a few years. So, the technology is definitely there. And I think the commercial piece is following very soon.
Fantastic. Well, we're just about out of time, so I would like to sincerely thank you, Dr. Alkhouri, for sharing your expert perspectives. It is indeed a very exciting time in MASH management. Thank you to our audience for participating. Before we close, I do want to offer three SMART goals, which are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. So these action items you can apply in the care of your patients in your own practice. So our goal is over the next 3 to 6 months to apply evidence-based insights from pivotal MASH trials to identify appropriate patient profiles for emerging therapies, to differentiate at least three major classes of emerging agents for MASH, including thyroid hormone receptor beta agonists, FGF21 analogs, and dual incretin or glucagon co-agonists by their mechanism of action and key clinical trial evidence. And then lastly, we'd like to integrate ongoing updates on FGF21 analog development into clinical education, as well as decision-making frameworks moving forward, and doing this by tracking at least two different leading candidate therapies as they progress from phase two to phase three, and as we look at clinical outcomes over time. To receive credit for this activity, please complete the evaluation and post-test. After that time, you'll be able to download and print your certificate for proof of participation. And again, I do strongly encourage you to check out the other three snack activities in this series. Thank you very much and have a great day.
Thank you.